Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
It's a slippery slope from dudes to poodles. Like, what? No, it's sheep, right?
It can be any animal, Meg. It doesn't have to be.
You don't need to be animalist, okay? Come on.
Welcome to Holy Ghosting, a podcast about deconstruction with your queer middle-aged mom friends. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Meg.
I'm Sarai. And happy Pride Month, ghosties. This year, the three of us wanted to share some of our own personal experiences with not just coming out as queer, but realizing, in fact, that we all are queer. I mean, we individually realize this for ourselves in different timelines and different ways. And so we haven't actually, I don't know that I've ever talked about this specifically for myself as like a continuous story. It's more like something that poked me, so to speak, here and there throughout my young adulthood and honestly, like teenage years and beyond. And I know that it's different for both Meg and Lindsay as well, but I think that it will be interesting. I will be interested even in hearing my own story at this point. But I'm looking forward to hearing from both of you. And of course, as you know, if you've listened at all, we were all raised in deep purity culture in the 80s and 90s, where a bunch of church girls who followed all the rules, but the ones we didn't think were important the whole time. And of course, we also grew up in the 90s, which was a time when homosexuality was under the microscope culturally. It was like a big political football. There's a lot of stuff going on around that, as always. But in the 90s, it was really kind of creeping into pop culture in different ways. And our evangelical worlds revolted against that. And there were some really ugly things. And we still see some of that today. You know, I think the Westboro Baptist Church comes to mind as a very extremely horrible example of that. But it's not that different than what mainstream churches were actually saying during the time that we were coming of age. So something I thought about today is like one of the experiences. I'm wondering if this is as universal as it seems, but have you ever known someone for a while? Maybe they're a married couple and you grew up with them or you're friends with them in whatever way. And suddenly the lady's like, oh, oops, I'm gay. And moves, like runs off with a woman. Like, have you experienced that in your friendships before?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Okay, cool. I was like, I'm kind of scared about this pause because if I'm the only one, like I've had it happen so many different times. I've had it happen. I've known friends who to whom this has kind of been their story. And I'm curious, did you ever think something like that would ever happen to you?
No.
I know, right?
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
I didn't know what heteronormativity was, but I was that. Like, it was so normal to me that that was the only option because it was the only thing possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting one. I had some friends who got together when they were in high school and they were like part of my youth group and they were married early, you know, like right after one of them graduated, I think. And
so pure.
Yeah. So pure. So, so good. And she ended up leaving for a woman and it caused so much drama in my church world at the time. I was like in college, so I wasn't even here.
How long were they together before this occurred?
Probably like, oh gosh, I don't know. They were probably like 7 years or 8 years or something.
They were like in their 20s, like she was in her late 20s.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that happened. And of course, there was a lot of narrative that went along with that. Like my mom, I remember having a lot of comments about it. Like, she was married to a man. What are you telling me that you're suddenly gay? Things like that.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of the commentary around it. Like that it's illegitimate. Like you should, I can't believe she's doing this. Like you're not gay. That's not even real, basically. Which isn't how they would frame it, like when they were talking about hate the sin, love the sinner, which is such a bullshit thing. But it was also, but it was also kind of real. So I think that's an interesting part of it is like, you're not a lesbian, you dated men. And the same when my cousin came out, I heard the same kind of rhetoric, like in my own family about, oh, well, how is she a lesbian? She's dated so many guys. Right. And you know, that's, I think that's also interesting.
It's interesting as you've been talking, Sarai, I've been thinking about more and more friends of mine that are women that left a man and went and like, I guess you could say ran off. I never thought of it like that way, but yeah, just that it's like that typical story of like, she can't be because she is married to or was with men, only men. Mm-hmm. And that for me came back down to like not understanding what anything beyond man and woman was like, you know, and just applying that which one's the boy in the relationship mindset to lesbian couples. Like who's the butch one? Who's the boy one? Like there isn't. Like there doesn't have to be, like, it's not the same. What that was the only lens I had, mm-hmm. which is wild. It's wild. Yeah. And that was what I was thinking in my 20s, when this happened with our best friends. And, you know, I was like, oh, well, I let me make sense of it in these ways, you know, by finding these hetero ways of normalizing or making sense of it, because I didn't understand. I had no concept of what a lesbian or bisexual person would even, you know, be thinking or feeling or anything.
And I think that we like to put people in, we Christians, evangelical Christians like to put people into boxes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there was these various, like, if you're a lesbian, well, then you're less, first of all, you're a sinner. Yeah. Second of all, you can only like women. Right. How dare you, you bad, bad person. But, you know, just the like, oh, the fact that you can date women and men like that, those like really pushing the boundaries. And
that was
like,
the most scandalous.
You know, no.
Right? Being bisexual, I think, was the most.
Oh, I didn't know anybody who literally, I don't think I knew that that existed. It was like you were gay or lesbian. And if you were, you probably had AIDS. So yeah. That's like fucked up. That's but also
literally what we
true.
Learned. That is what
true.
We learned.
Like that is what we were taught.
Like eventually you will have regular sex one day with your partner and you will 100% get AIDS if you are gay. That was the...
And you will die.
Yes.
Yeah. You guys, I was just remembering this the other day and I wasn't thinking about this episode, but it applies. My little homeschooled self in junior high was taking gymnastics lessons. You know, we were allowed out in the world for like sports.
Oh, yeah.
And my gymnastics coach was a lesbian, or at least that's what my parents told me, like kind of a larger bodied gruff woman with a short haircut. So, you know, at least looked the part, but.
So the boy in the relationship is what you're telling me?
Sure. I never met her partner. So if she was partnered, you know,
she's the boy one,
right? She was my gymnastics coach. But I remember specifically she had what I now realize is probably eczema or something, like skin problems. And I remember my family murmuring that maybe it was like HIV AIDS.
What?
So,
wow,
yeah. Geez. Yeah.
Which was like the only possibility.
Right. If you're gay and you have health problems.
Must be AIDS. Also, AIDS. We're not going to study it or figure it out or anything, but we're going to assume because you're gay, it's AIDS.
100%.
Because also we were as a group of people, we were against AIDS research. Like, you know?
Well, we thought it was God's punishment. That, I mean, we were like all in with Pat Robertson on that bullshit.
Justification,
you know? Like,
for hate.
We sucked as a people.
the internalized messaging around that, though, the fear around the HIV AIDS crisis, I internalized that for sure. And like, I just remember like my feeling of, because I don't remember a lot of like my parents' generation like running off and becoming gay. They're all far too like closeted, right? They aren't allowing themselves to be who they should be.
Yeah.
And so it was their children, right, that are queer, or at least allowing themselves to like realize that they are. And I just remember the sadness that was associated with that when you found out that these dear family friends have a queer child. And it was just like the pity, the like the prayers for that family, the struggle.
Can I ask a question about this? Which is worse, finding out that the daughter is pregnant, not a virgin anymore and pregnant, or finding out that your son is gay?
Gay.
Yeah, that would have made my parents sadder, I think.
Because the pregnancy can be touted at, like, you can trot them out as an example of the, well, in the pro-life movement, because they can either raise the baby or give it up for adoption.
Oh, you're right. Turning a terrible thing into God's, how do I say that?
Little miracle for some other lady who's not my daughter.
Here you go, white lady. Yeah. Here's a white baby. Yeah.
Enjoy your white baby. Oh my gosh. We are just packed to the brim with a lot of shit. Okay.
Just getting right into it.
Yeah. But given this milieu in which we were raised, and also this concept of compulsory heteronormativity, where everyone in society is like men, women, that is how things happen. And you will find man and you will find woman and they will be happy and fuck and have babies and everything is great. And that is like the way that we've structured so much. Only in the last, God, like 10, 20 years have we started to see more mainstreaming of even like gay characters and like in media having expression of queerness. And that's good. I mean, I know there's like a lot of other stuff I'm saying mainstreaming, the place where we see it more and just kind of whatever we're consuming and not like you're going to a drag show on purpose. You know what I mean? I don't want to discount the rich history of all of the things that people who are truly putting their lives at risk and their livelihoods at risk to come out and to be visible that they have done up until this fucking present day that makes it possible for all of us to be like, whoopsies, I guess I am queer. That's great for me. It's just, I think it is important for us to like acknowledge the solemnity of that past and history and also to be grateful for it because we have benefited from it, even though, you know, if someone had given me a sign to protest gayness when I was 9 or 10 years old, I guess I would have, you know, because that's what you do when you're a kid. How old were you each when you had the first tiny little inkling of like, oh, is that, that's weird. Maybe what if I'm a lesbian? Like, has that ever crossed your
42.
Mind? All right. Perfect. Good answer.
Mine was probably like 37, 38, somewhere in there, but didn't voice it or admit it to like 39, 40, somewhere in there.
All right.
So, Rai, what about you?
I was in high school. I was like 15, I think.
From a Christian perspective, that's definitely late.
Yes.
From a normal development perspective.
It's like how I never wanted to like be a missionary or a pastor, like how I always like wasn't fully evangelical. You were like much more open to sexuality. You were fucking masturbating. Yeah.
Well, you were the sexy one, right? You're the sexy one.
Yes. Lindsay's I was a sexy kid.
What are you? The spooky.
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 Skeptical one. Spookies. Yeah.
You're the spooky one.
Well, I think also I always was like, why is it that, like the way that the church taught men and women in a dynamic was the woman submits and like the wife shouldn't talk and all this other bullshit, right? And I was always offended by that because it made no sense to me and it still doesn't. And it turns out it's mostly because the Apostle Paul, and we've already discussed how much I don't thank him. But I think what you're both, like, you're both kind of inklings later is a really interesting thing too, because it seems like along the timeline of your own kind of deconstruction and letting go of evangelicalism, it happened after deconstruction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think in a way, so it did for me as well. It was more like in high school, people would be like, you're a lesbian because you never have a boyfriend and you hang out with Amy all the time, who is my best friend, which is true. We always hung out. But I was like shocked by it at first. And then I wondered, and then I kind of started thinking of women in a different way. And then it got a little confusing for me, but then I just backed off of it and shut it down. But it was there, kind of in the background.
Lindsay, did anyone ever tell you that you were a lesbian?
No.
Yeah, never, me either. Ever. No one ever suggested it.
I literally didn't know it was an option, or if I did, it was like a really bad option. So it was like, wasn't what I wanted. And I was a very like, I know what I want to do with my life, you know, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. So I just feel like, well, the path, you know, I got to get married to a dude someday. So that's
yes,
what I, you know, it's just like the only option that was presented to me. And so that's wow. what I did. And I'm very good at like compartmentalizing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was living in Southern California. I was only like after college, I went to freaking Christian college. I graduated, hung out with all of my Christian friends. I knew one gay person who got kicked out of Biola for being gay. And so beyond that, I wasn't friends with any lesbians. I didn't have girls hitting on me. Like, I think if that would have happened, that might have like been guys hit on me all the time. So I was like used to that. Like, I was like, cool. I loved male attention, man. If I would have gotten some female attention, I would have,
what would have been different for you? Like, what do you think would have, were you freer? Like, what was your state of mind that would have maybe made it okay?
When I was living down there, before I came back to Portland, after I graduated from Bible college, like, this is when I started having sex, you know? This is when I think I was being a little bit more free. I was, like, drinking a fair amount as well. Hadn't discovered weed yet, unfortunately. And so I think if that opportunity had been presented, I would have let my mind, like, at least consider it, right, and see what that meant for me. But mm-hmm. I ran in such straight circles again. It just, like, didn't even fucking dawn on me. And so then I move up here, I get married pretty much immediately. And then you're not allowed to have those thoughts when you're married to a dude, you know? So it was just like, well, that's not helpful to my relationship. So you just stuff it. You know, I'd had dreams about like doing stuff with girls. And I was like, oh, what does that mean? I mean, I have dreams about doing stuff with guys too, but like, you know, like,
can I ask, at that point, did you know or identify it yourself, or were you still being like, oh no?
I think I started to know, because I think that there's those, I mean, first of all, Nick and I have had some bumps in our relationship, and there's definitely in my head being like, I'm never fucking dating a man again. Uh-huh. I still stand by that.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. I remember listening to the song Silk Chiffon, that Phoebe Bridgers and Muna song, and all about like how her skin's so soft, like silk chiffon. And I felt this like wistful, like, I fucking love that song. It's a great song. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to Silk Chiffon right now. And it made me really sad. Mm-hmm. And it made me really sad because I like never had that experience. I was like, I want to feel like some woman's skin on me that feels soft, like silk chiffon. Yeah. I don't know. I just had this like sadness that I didn't get to have that experience. And it wasn't even like, I need to have it right now. It was like, man, college Lindsay would have liked that a lot, you know?
Yeah. And you can see yourself like, oh, maybe this friendship, like, I've just now started to think that way. Like, have you thought like, oh, maybe this friendship would have also benefited, and for both of us, if we had been able to just literally laying like topless together. It's just a different like level of a relationship.
But I so compartmentalize, like the people I want to be my friends, I want to be my friends, and the people I want to like screw around, like I put them in different categories. I don't know.
So Lindsay doesn't play Smash or Pass with her friends. Okay.
Okay.
No, yeah. I don't want to smash my friends. I just don't.
You have a real friend zone because it's compartmentalized.
I really do.
You're like, you're in this zone.
It was a real problem in Bible college though, because I like loved being friends with guys. And again, maybe this is because like I wasn't attracted. Maybe
you weren't attracted to those guys. They were safe. I've thought that.
No. And I was so mad when they were all like ultimately like, oh, I want to marry you. I'm like, fuck that. We're besties.
Yeah.
Same. So mad at them.
Same.
All the time. But so my last little thought on this is, so when I finally told Nick, because it felt scary to tell him because I was like, I don't know what he's going to do with this information, or does this change our relationship in any way? And he was like so happy, and he was like, I've realized I'm bi too. And he just like hugged me, and we're like, oh my God, we're bi together. And we were both like, we don't know what this means. So I don't think it changes a lot, but it was really cute. And we just felt really free to be like, okay, so like you think, and I was like, it was like this, I'm sorry that you haven't had that experience. Yeah. I'm sorry that I haven't. But then we're also like really happy with each other and where we're at in a relationship. And it just felt like knowing each other on a slightly different level and being okay with that. And yeah,
I really love that.
It was really nice.
I love it.
It is. And especially like you got to have this moment of liberation together. Like those moments are so valuable with your partner. Like those to me are those, they're the kind of bonding experiences that you just, you get to put into, this is a partner and we get to share this experience, this time in our life together. Like it's, I cherish those things, you know, like those are what make a relationship, a partnership, it's like weaving your life in these ways together. And it's just beautiful. And yeah, I'm sad for you guys too. Like you guys are both really good friends of mine. And I feel that for you, like, especially knowing, you know, for yourself kind of in these different ways. And as you talked about your, you know, self-knowing, it's just, yeah, I just really appreciate you being open to share that, because it's not similar to my experience. It's not what I've heard from Sarai's experience. And I love that you and just like one of your best friends got to do that together. And I love you guys. That's just...
And you know what's funny? I think I like came out to this, you know, podcast to the ghosties before anyone else. And I remember, it's funny because I remember when we said like, oh, two-thirds of us are queer or whatever. And Meg was like, I'm not.
True.
Well, so the question earlier was, when did you know? So what day did we record that? Because maybe didn't know then.
Yeah, probably.
Sure, yeah, you sure didn't.
Before you were 42. Yeah.
Wow, it's an early one then, ghosties.
Yeah.
I need to go find it. Maybe it was like, I think it was Little Rebellions. Because I think Little Rebellions is when probably. I officially said... Because I like hadn't told my parents, I still haven't really told my parents, and they don't listen to this podcast. So I'm like, what is it? You know what? Because if I tell my parents, all they're going to hear is Lindsay's getting divorced, not getting divorced. But in their mind, you know, it's just like, it's not helpful. If they ask me or if it comes up, I will. Nick thinks we need to tell them in solidarity and be allies. I don't know. I'm like, I'm just not ready for that fucking drama right now. I just don't need it.
So I have a theory that I have like come to about this idea of coming out. For me is that, so when I came out to my mom, I think I'd said it was about 8 months, maybe after, I needed language. I just needed to have some words to talk about in a more succinct way, you know, like I had needed to figure some things out first before I was ready to move into this idea of coming out to people. And I thought it was so important. And put a lot of pressure on myself for like when and how. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in therapy, like figuring that stuff out and with my people. And it wasn't until she said, did you tell your brother, that like everything came to a big halt with this like idea of coming out. And I was like, well, I mean, we don't live in the same place. We don't see each other very often. Like, we're not very intimate. Like, me and my brother have matching tattoos. It's just a heart. It says meh on it. And that's like kind of how we feel. But like, if we weren't related, we might not ever speak to each other again. Like, it's just, you know, we grew up in a really intense way. And we both are have led very different lives in different states. Like, it's just, it's fine. And then I felt this obligation, like, oh my God, I have to tell my brother, like, this person that I lived with for, I think, the first 15, 16 years of my life. Not that long when you actually think about it. When you do the math, it's like, my husband and I,
you've lived with Andy longer.
Andy and I have lived together 24 years now. We just had our 24th wedding anniversary. We didn't live together ahead of time, as you know, per the virgin rule. But, yeah, it's like, you're not obligated to inform the people that you spent, like, literally at this point, the least amount of your life with, the least intimate amount of your life. They didn't want to talk to you about your sex life. They didn't want to talk to you about your crushes or who you loved or didn't love, or maybe they did. Maybe there was like a level of that at some point, but that's just like not a thing that, you know, me and my mom don't talk about sex or my sex life, but I love my mom. She's like an intimate person in my life, and I wanted her to know me and to know a new person that I loved in a new way, who was a woman, who is a woman. Like, that's a, you know, I didn't want to hide who I was at my own home. Like, I made that choice at one point, like a very clear, I want to just be and exist with the people that love me and that care about me and that I love and care about. And I don't want to have to be different at my own home. Like, this should be safe for everyone. I've made it a safe place for other people to just exist and be and respected their pronouns and their names and never dead name them. And, you know, I've made a point to make a safe space here. And I didn't allow myself that safety. And people don't have to know everything about you. And if they want to know you, they will know you. If they want to know your people, mm-hmm. you know, they'll know your people, or they'll be really cruel and mean. And you can just say, like, thank you for letting me know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is not love to me. So I'm going to move on. I've had a wild year.
Yeah, it is a wild time. Yeah, I kind of going back to mine, I definitely knew for sure that I was at least sexually attracted to women and really like people of other gender expressions that besides just men. And I have been in significant relationships with men exclusively until a few years ago. And so what that did was, you know, it does shut off the possibilities for anyone else when you're in a monogamous heterosexual relationship and you're, you know, we're married a virgin somehow, even though you really were just like avoiding checking off the P&B box because that's the one that
even
counts.
Though you're the sexy one. God.
I know. Well, I also am still the eldest child and like an A++ student. You know what I'm saying?
Lindsay won the slut award only because she was not a virgin when she got married.
Yeah, wildly unexpected. It's probably because I waited to the old age of 27 to get married. Yeah, so
did I. It was ridiculous. I mean, I was 26. I was almost 27. Yeah.
You have so much sex to make up for.
That's what I think. That's my whole thing. 100%. Yes. And so therefore, here I am. But I knew since I was 25, it was also interesting because I had a lot of thoughts about like, do I come out? Like, what is the point of coming out when I was in other relationships with people? I also definitely knew that I would lose, even though I wasn't like exactly Christian then, I knew I would lose the support of people who still assumed I was. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I hadn't come out as not a Christian at all. I didn't do that for a long time after it had happened already, but I definitely had this feeling of like, if I tell people, like my parents won't support me. And I was really close with my family, my nuclear family at this time. And I live in the same town where I was raised, which is like not what I thought I'd be doing as an adult, but here we are. And yeah, I didn't want that consequence because I already had faced that kind of a consequence in church by just basically being a heretic, I guess, like disagreeing with the denominational authorities about something. Surprise, surprise, Sarai, I had a bone to pick with somebody who's trying to tell her what to do.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Yeah, I actually, this is a place of contrast that I think is interesting. It's we grew up in a world where like queerness and queer people were basically invisible or like the scariest mm-hmm. thing that we were supposed to be so afraid of. Actually, mm-hmm. I remember like in my youth, I was probably middle school, high school, there was a guy that had AIDS who was a part of my church. But we all went to visit him all the time. Like they took us to his house all the time because he got AIDS from a blood transfusion, not from having sex with men. And so therefore we could care for him and take, you know, feed his soul wow. with our beautiful music okay. or whatever we were over mm-hmm. there doing. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Well, yeah. I mean, that yeah. was just not his fault. But like, so he yeah. shouldn't get well, that's punished.
Right.
But wait, was he gay?
Probably.
No, I have no idea. I have no idea. Like, he didn't have a partner, but I don't know. I have no idea. And also, who knows? The church people would lie. True. It's just what they do.
Was he a single man who lived alone?
Yeah, except for he had a caretaker eventually.
Yeah, but yes. He was gay.
I know. Oh, my God.
It's like when your dad says, whoa. I'm going to take your dog to a farm. And you find out when you're 27 that that is actually a euphemism for murdering your dog. That's my story.
Oh, murder. That's really sad.
Mine was a cat, and we were told that it was going to go live in the country and, mm-hmm. like, chase mice mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And live this happy, free life, and it got taken to the pound. It did yes. not get killed. And so, and I did not realize that till yeah. adulthood.
How yeah. many yeah. little Christian kids were being told that they're— We couldn't believe that all dogs go to heaven, but they did all go to farms in the country.
They sure did. That's heaven for dogs. So I'm sorry that everyone was wrong about all dogs go to heaven, and we should put it back in our canonical viewing list.
Yeah, they sure do, because dogs are perfect. Do you see my napping behind me?
They're so cute.
Fucking cute.
I love them.
Yay! Keep it warm for me, Snugs.
I love it.
They will. They'll keep it warm and furry for you.
Can't wait to cuddle, maybe.
The thing I wanted to contrast is the invisibility of queerness and almost the non-existence of queer people because it mm-hmm. was thought of as a choice. So, like, you can't be queer. You can just choose to, I guess, have sex with people you're not supposed to have sex with mm-hmm. or whatever.
I literally just saw a tweet exchange with Mason Menenga, who's, like, one of my favorite, like, progressive Christian people online. And someone tweeted at him and asked him if he thought, like, you know, is it a sin to have gay sex? And he said no. And then the next tweet, he was like, do you think it's a sin to have sex with animals? Because of course.
Oh my God.
Of course
it is. Like conflating. Like there's, we make jokes about this. We make jokes about the bestiality thing. No, people are still out here
being like, believing that.
It's a slippery slope from dudes to poodles. Like what?
No, it's sheep, right? I mean,
it can be any animal, Meg. It doesn't have to be. The joke we always make is sheep.
Animalist. Okay. Come on.
God, it's so gross. It's so gross. And I think, again, going back to like the sad, just for me, it was sad. It was something to be mourned. If you knew someone that was queer, right. It was like,
yeah.
Which also leads into conversion therapy yep. and all of that. I mean, I have a cousin who was sent to that. Like, yeah. I. you all have met. And it just, and it's the one freaking cousin in our very conservative Christian family who has dared to come out. You know what I mean? I guess technically I am, but Lord knows if the aunts and uncles actually know. They probably don't. I don't think they're listening to this. I hope not. I don't want to deal. And I had this realization recently that with my own child, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, like before, say if you would have asked me when I was pregnant, like, you know, what I would have felt if like this future child of mine, you know, was queer, I probably would have told you that there, I would have been like happy and accepting, but like a little fearful and sad. And not because I thought being gay was wrong at that point, but because I know how the world treats queer people. But I also think that that was probably a little bit of an excuse. I think it was probably a little bit both, like fear of the unknown, fear of not having to deal with it. And now, fast forward, like having a, you know, 9-year-old child that has been socialized, you know, identifies as female. And I had the thought the other day of like, I really hope that she's a lesbian or at least queer, because then I don't have to deal with like toxic masculinity and rape culture.
That's actually kind of a liberating feeling though, that I get from that idea. I have a young person who is in my life who's not out to the family because it's religious and not accepting. And she just went to prom, and the photos of her and her girlfriend are just like so beautiful, and they're just not shared with everyone. And, you know, I still am in a position where I feel a privilege to be able to witness her in this full way, that she's able to have this experience, this beautiful, fun, you know, high school classic American experience with her girlfriend. And she's in, you know, they're in environments that are safe for that because of where they live. And that's not how it is even in our country, even in our state, even in our towns. There are places really close to where I live that I still get nervous if I'm walking and holding a woman's hand. Like it's not, it doesn't feel safe everywhere.
And in Oregon, it feels like this progressive, you know, haven for all kinds of queer people. And sure, there are places that are that, and it's certainly more open here than other places. But I think that like how many people still have to remain hidden, and how long it even took us to be honest with our true selves and be able to talk about it, knowing that there's going to, you know, the hatred Meg has received for being honest online about being queer. You know, you started telling your story this year on TikTok, and so much ugliness. And to me at this point, I'm like, I literally see nothing. In fact, I'm like, if you're queer, I'm like, great. That probably means I'm going to like you more. There's just something about it that means that like there's a joy with leaning into your true self and who you are, even if you aren't acting on it. Like I struggled with this imposter syndrome for a while, being like, I'm married to a man and I consider myself queer. And is that like fake? Am I not queer enough? Am I not like, cause I'm not acting out on these things. There's like no fucking right way to be queer.
That's right.
You can do with it what you will. Yes. Like just know in your heart who you are and who you, and like, I'm happily partnered. You know what I mean? I'm really fucking happy in my life. And if that ever changes, then I will reevaluate. You know what I mean? Like
the thing about queerness is freedom though. Like it gives you a freedom coming out for yourself. For me, the coming out was for me. And I didn't realize that at the time when I started, you know, the coming out of like, okay. And I would just like, I would tell this really kind of lengthy story about what I had experienced, you know, 3 months prior, 6 months prior, 8 months prior, and as I got up the courage to tell different people in my life. And every single one of them, I was met with like anticipation and excitement of like, are you going to say what I think you're going to say? Like, I'm ready to be happy for you. And it was just so challenging for me to like say, I'm queer. I love a woman. The only reason I know I'm queer is because we kissed one time and I was like, is that that's a feeling that I didn't think I would feel, except for with a man, because I thought I was hetero. And apparently this is what it means to have lesbian feelings or gay feelings or queerness. I had no idea. And I think that we should talk about that more on our next episode.
I think that sounds great, Meg. And yeah, let's get into that a little bit more in our next episode. We're going to visit an internet document called, it's an internet thing. It's a queer canon on the internet is what it is. The Lesbian Master Doc. And we'll talk through it a little bit more. But it asks really interesting mm-hmm. questions, especially if you're in the situation of, like Lindsay was saying, oh, I know that I'm queer. I don't know exactly what that means. And like for me, it also was always confusing. I didn't know if I would be like fall in love with a woman or if I was just like sexually interested in women, like what was there or not.
I didn't know that there were even options or that any of that was possible.
Oh yeah. You can mix and match so many exciting things.
Until I heard that this document existed and it could just, you know, ask you some yes or no questions. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. A little bit.
Turns out you can be queer kind of any damn way you please. And it doesn't even look right the same for any of us. And that's okay. Like you can sit with that. One last thing I want to say in this episode is that clearly it took us all a minute to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so much hope for our kids and for the next generations because it is just so much more normal to understand different gender expressions and be fluid in their sexuality and just fucking love who they want to love and be attracted to who they want to be attracted to and fuck who they want to fuck. You know, like, I don't want to think about right now because my kid's really little.
Sure.
But like someday. And I think that like there's just... while there is some sadness that it took me so fucking long to realize these parts of myself, like the joy that I see that we are imparting to our kids, just like let them be who they want to be. It like, I'm getting emotional. I never get emotional. It's like really beautiful and I really love it. And like one of my favorite things that we do as a family, there's like an elementary school in our neighborhood that leads a pride parade every year. And it is literally elementary student led. Like it is children who are leading this parade. And it is the most joyful, like beautiful celebration. It's one of my favorite things we do every year. I cry at this parade every year because just the amount of like just joyful children who are like living into their like true identities. It's like something that none of us had and something that evangelicalism did not offer anyone. And I just, these kids give me so much hope. And I'm like bawling over here.
Seeing that freedom though, you feel the energy of that freedom and it feels so different from the environment that we grew up in. And
it's like the opposite of repression.
Yeah. Me being around these kids, I had these kids in my life. We talked about this on the Sex Evangelicals. Yeah. Just last week for Mother's Day about how these teenagers graduated from high school, came to live with me, family members, kids, and I watched them just be in a safe space where they could explore who they were and the secret things that they had thought about or tried away from the religious constraints when they possibly could. They just got to live and they got to exist. And I got to learn so much about myself by watching them become who they are.
Yeah.
And now I'm able to say, I do identify as non-binary because I understood that that's just who I've been. And that finally there's just a phrase, a word, a way to put it into a space that says, do not force me into what your idea of womanhood looks like and should be. I am a woman and I'm so proud of my womanhood, my she, my lioness, my motherhood. And I am so proud of my non-binariness, that other parts of me can be free in the ways that they are. And I don't have to hide them and constrain them in this female woman only, you know, space. Now I have a friend that I knew from middle school who said, you know, for her kid, who's a senior, who's non-binary, the more that they see adults their parents' age coming out and saying, yes, I understand this identity. I identify in the same way. This is okay. This is safe. And guess what? It doesn't change any part of who I am or who I've been. It just tells you more about me so that you can know me in more ways. And that's helping them to feel like, okay, we didn't just make this up as a generation. It's just that people have had to hide, and they've had to hide from themselves, and they've had to hide from everyone. This year and a half for me has been a life-changing experience. And it's, yeah.
Yeah, gay and trans people have always existed. We just ignored them for a long time, and we hid them, and we made them feel ashamed. And, you know, as a person who still, you know, identifies as religious, let me tell you, going to a pride parade is like maybe the most spiritual experience that I have all year. Like, I feel God in that Chili's. Like, if there is a God out there, she is like smiling down upon that, because it is, again, it is so pure, and I would even possibly call it holy.
Well, we haven't shared a lot of our own stories in this kind of a way, and turns out we have more to share. So we will see you again next time. I'm celebrating Pride personally out for the first time this year. And if you're somebody who's like me and haven't found the right ways to talk about or experience your queerness, I hope that you found some freedom and some solidarity in our stories and the things that we've shared today. And, you know, maybe this year it's too early for you to go out for Pride. Last year it was too early for me. But you get to be you in whatever way that you are. We love you, Ghosties. We appreciate each one of you. If you want to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or join us on our Patreon page, you can. Please do. It helps us to help pay for our editor. Thanks to Josh Gilbert for the amazing work you're doing on our podcast editing. We appreciate you. And if you want to support us, that's where our money goes. If you want to find us on the internet, you know we're there. We like to be there almost every day, posting irreverent things on TikTok. You can also now find us on YouTube if you like that kind of place, or on Instagram. We do have a Facebook group that you can join. It is private, but anyone can join. Or you can come find us over on Patreon at holyghosting.com. You can click all the links to all these places and find us wherever you like to be. We're there. See you next time, Ghosties, and happy Pride.